Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith with another Tactical Fitness Report, and we have a special guest today, Bridget Truxillo. And you are a former SWAT operator, former police officer,
yes,
then SWAT operator, narcotics investigator, and now a lawyer. So that is quite a journey that I would love to hear about. But first of all, welcome to the Tactical Fitness Report.
Well, thank you. I'm super excited to be here and have this fun conversation with you. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we talk about on the Tactical Fitness Report is really, obviously tactical fitness, but it goes way beyond, push-ups and running. It is all things that involve the tactical professions, military, law enforcement, firefighters, and the phases of tactical fitness. And the way I break up the phases of tactical fitness is you have your first phase where you're a recruit or a mm-hmm. candidate, and you get the idea where you want to serve in some manner, mm-hmm. your country, your community, what profession mm-hmm. you want to go. So you are now in that recruit process. And that usually means you have to start preparing for a fitness test to get into the training, and maybe the boot camp or the academy or selection process to get through the into the job you want to do. And then, there's your life as that candidate officer where you're going through a boot camp or academy or, selection. And then you're also the final phase, third phase. And we don't call it the final phase, but the third phase is your active duty job in itself, where if you're in there for a long period of time, you're going to be older than you are younger in this job, which comes with a variety of issues. Mm-hmm. There is a certain amount of stress that you will see in your job. I mean, we all see stress in our daily lives, but there are stressful events that can be traumatic, that can be cumulative to a point where they become chronic if we don't learn how to mitigate that type of stress. Mm-hmm. And then final, there is a fourth phase of tactical fitness, which we call it the post-career life. You want to be healthy enough to enjoy the years after your profession is ended. Mm-hmm. And that comes with dealing with a lot of aches and pains of the prior how many years you were serving, and then maybe even taking your training and moving it into other worlds, which is something that I like to discuss as well, because there seems to be a lot of logical progressions that police officers have, and they go into a couple of them. I've seen a lot of go into legal professions as well as the psychology professions. They tend to go into one of those, and that seems like a very logical transition, if you're a growth minded person, right? Mm-hmm. And then we go into another parallel to that would be the combat medic who becomes a doctor, right? Mm-hmm. So these are just growth minded individuals that are pursuing a life of just improvement every stage of their journey. So with that, sorry to kind of a long introduction, but sometimes we get people who are new here that aren't quite sure what we're going to talk about. But so for you, please tell us your story. What made you want to serve when you first decided, and how was that journey getting into the law enforcement?
So I went to University of Florida for college, and to make it a super long story, I was in my fourth year of engineering at the University of Florida when I hated it. And even at that young age, I thought, this cannot be what life is about, and had no idea what engineering even was when I picked it. But that's my personality, is that if I pick something and then I say it out loud, I'm going to stick with it. And so I was struggling through it in physics 1 and 2 and, calculus, math, and all that stuff, differential equations, just math and sciences and physics out the wazoo. And I was miserable. Around that time, I got a job at a health club in Gainesville, Florida, which is the Gainesville Health and Fitness Center. It's owned by Joe Cerulli. And he didn't just own a health club. He had these amazing managers that created, they literally created leaders. I mean, the best manager I ever had in my life. And I joke with him, we're still friends. And I joke with him and say that he ruined me for the rest of my life. And not because I'm all Debbie Downer about anything, but I'm not. But it's a joke to say that he taught me what like a really good job could be about. Even at the time I was making minimum wage, which I don't remember how, I mean, now I'll date myself and say, I think it was like four something or five something. I don't remember, but I loved it. I was getting paid minimum wage and I was working my butt off because it was so motivating. And I got worked up to be a supervisor. And my style is that if you say I can be a supervisor, I want to get it in 6 months. And then like, well, it's better if you wait till a year. I'm like, nope, I want to get it in 6 months. And so worked my butt off and got to be a supervisor. And at a health club, we were getting training weekly on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, the 1 Minute Manager by Ken Blanchard, like how to deal with what you call moments of truth. Like, you don't, when you have a difficult moment, you deal with it right then. And how do you deal with it in the right way? So that when you, whoever walks away from the moment, like you might not be dealing something that you want, that's a happy thing, but you have to deal with it. Just go ahead and deal with it. And there's ways to do that in the right way. Like giving reprimands, you know, or giving praise, you should do both all the time. So, you know, in this minimum wage per hour job that I had, it was so motivating to me. At the same time, while I was at school for something that I hated, and those things didn't go together. And just so happened that my mentor, he's a lifelong mentor for me, but my supervisor, the manager who was teaching us all this stuff, he and the co-founder of this company, they left and started a company called O2B Kids, which is an amazing children's entertainment and education facility in Florida, and worked for him there. And he and his co-founder of O2B Kids had traveled the world for a year. I mean, they went all the way around, and it was during that trip that they came up with the idea for O2B Kids. And that was just super motivating. And then he was always the type who was like, you know, if you want to try something, try it. Don't be afraid of it. And so, long story short, kind of not really, I quit school, withdrew from school, and traveled to New Zealand by myself. My dad didn't talk to me for almost a year because of that, because he was convinced that, I'm a parent and I have 3 kids, I would just poop myself if my daughter said to me at 20 years old, yeah, I'm going to withdraw from school and go traveling around the world by myself. And this was before cell phones or laptops, or like you couldn't just like check in all the time. I only called him when I could get to like a payphone. I know maybe the young people on these calls aren't sure what a payphone is, but I mean, literally.
And it was expensive too. Those calls were expensive.
Yeah. Some of it was collect calls. I mean, it was really expensive back then. So, but that was foundational for me. I mean, I did it on my own and I loved it. It was only a month, but I mean, it was a month. And one of the cool things about it was I took a train across the Southern United States. So at the time I live in Houston now, but I was in Florida at the time. Like I flew to meet my mom in Houston. And I took the train from Houston to Los Angeles, went to New Zealand, came back, and then took a train from Los Angeles to Jacksonville. And that was, you want to see snippets of America?
Yeah, that's cool.
Get on an Amtrak train for 3 days.
Yeah.
I sat next to a guy who told me he had just gotten out of a prison for stabbing the man he caught his wife in bed with another man and he stabbed him. They're like, oh my gosh, I need to change seats. But I probably shouldn't tell my daughters this, because if they ever think this is cool, I don't want them to, I would just be so nervous if they did that, but it just set them free at some point. Yeah. So came back, knew I needed to get this. At the time, I still like a stupid degree. I ended up getting a degree in environmental horticulture just because they accepted all my maths and sciences as electives. And so I only had one more year while working full time, because my dad completely cut me off. Working full time, came up to graduating, didn't really want to use horticulture for anything. I liked it, but I didn't want to do it. And then I joke around and say that I watched G.I. Jane and thought it was cool. So, and coming from your background, I do not mean to offend you at all, because I know G.I. Jane is not representative of what your life is really like. But I liked it in the sense that I just like movies where it's like tough. I mean, she was doing one-arm push-ups and like that was cool to me. And so decided somehow that I wanted to go to the FBI or DEA, partially because I thought that was cool and it'd be challenging to get there. I've always sought out things that are challenging. And I also wanted a job that required me to be fit. And I thought that law enforcement, you know, at that time I had already, like, exercise was a part of my life. It 100% helped me mentally. You know, I'm vain enough to say it helps you look good and helps you live longer. And so I went to the police academy so that I could get to federal law enforcement. And then once I, and of course I'm the dork, I say not dorky, but I mean, I'm dorky in the sense, like, I really believe in our constitution and the structure of our country. And is it perfect? No, it's not, but we're still an amazing country. And I mean, it gives me the chills in the back of my head because I'm sure. Just dorky that way. But
I love it.
I believe in it. I believe strongly in right and wrong and order and, you know, bringing order to life and protecting people. And I just thought it was super cool that could possibly be me, that I could be one of those people protecting others. And so went to the police academy in Gainesville the week after I graduated from college, and quickly got hired on. Well, to start the police academy, I got hired by the sheriff's office. So I was lucky that I got paid while I was in the academy. And started the sheriff's office, started in patrol, and loved that. And then very quickly got the bug to, well, number one, because I wanted to get a job that made me very marketable to federal law enforcement. So wanted to get into narcotics unit if I could, because I thought that would give me, like, investigative skills that they would be interested in. And so very quickly interviewed for narcotics unit. Again, I think it's smart to have a lot more experience under your belt before you go into the narcotics unit. Sure. But not me. I decided I needed to do it very quick. So luckily they didn't have any females on the narcotics unit. So I got that about 10 months in or so. Well, within a year I was in the narcotics unit. And then I did that for the rest of it for about the next 3 years. I was an undercover narcotics. I joke around and say that I used to buy crack for a living. And I'm not joking in the sense that I bought a lot of crack. But about the same time I got onto the narcotics unit, I tried out for the SWAT team because why not? I mean, super physically challenging. I loved the idea of learning the tactics of it.
Yeah, compare real quick your academy experience and your SWAT team selection experience.
Okay, so, you know, the academy. So, you know, I always worked out. Like, I always ran. Like, I at the time lived out in the country outside of Gainesville, and my boyfriend at the time, his family owned a bunch of land, and we had this sounds so country, lived in a mobile home out in the middle of this piece of land that his family owned.
Hey, well, just not to interrupt, I'm sorry I am, but I grew up in North Florida.
Where?
So I grew up in Swanee County.
Okay, so I mean,
just
I was
like
in
a county over. County over.
Oaxaca County. We live right, actually my address was Micanopy, which is in between Gainesville and Washington.
Yep.
And so I actually took my John Deere mower and rut, and this, I don't remember how many acres it was, but I had marked out, I would mow a 3 mile track for me through this field, so that I loved running out there, and I would run 3 miles through this cow pasture. And every once in a while, the cows would, you know, make a rut through it for me. And every once in a while, I'd have to get on my John Deere tractor and mow my 3 mile path again, but whatever. So when I decided to go to the police academy, you know, I felt like I was already okay physically, you know, but I mean, and honestly, I'm sure I did a PT test for the academy, but I don't remember it. What I remember is when I did the PT test, when I was applying to the DEA, and I was trying to get a really fast running time. And I remember, I can't remember if I threw up, but I almost threw up when I was finished running. It happens.
It shows you're trying.
Jacksonville, and it was summer and it was hot and humid as hell.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted, I think I tried to throw up without the guy seeing me, but he's probably seen that.
What, was that back when they had the 2 mile timed run, or was it the mile and a half
version? I can't remember. It was 2003 or 2004.
Oh yeah. That was the old school one. They've recently changed their test to be the same as the FBI now.
Which is what?
Push-ups, sit-ups, 300 meter run, and a mile and a half run.
Oh,
not in that order, but you would have had a shuttle run. You'd have had pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups, and a 2 mile run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember wanting to throw up after the run.
That was a hard test.
So even getting into the police academy, I mean, I knew I wanted to be fit for that. And at the time, but not going into it, I thought, like, you have to be fit to be a cop. And sure, people talk about how cops are lazy and fat and they like donuts and all. And I was like, no, that's not true. And So I definitely trained. I actually got highest fitness award at the police academy, which was surprising to me because we had, of course, ex-military in there and a guy that was just the epitome of what a Marine looks like in my mind. That guy and then one of the guys I was on SWAT team with, like they are poster boys for the Marines. And so definitely trained hard, took I just took it all very serious because to
you
me-
You have to.
Yeah,
you to have job to, do this.
To live, yeah. You should be fit. If yes. you need to chase people, you need to be fit. And that's not, I'm gonna go run, check the box. That's maintenance. I mean,
yeah.
And I don't wanna say strategic. I certainly know so much more now about fitness than I did even back then. I mean, here's an example. I would eat cereal in the morning, which I would never eat now, but just cause it's empty calories. There's right. nothing that will sustain you. I mean, if I was like literally about to pass out and needed to eat some Cheerios, I would, but like, then I would go back and eat some protein or some
yeah,
fats
some
or
real
whatever.
Food. Yeah.
So definitely took the exercise part of it very seriously. Like I said, got the highest fitness award at the police academy. And then, you know, got into patrol, very much wanted to do something elite physically. When it came time to try out for SWAT team, which was in November and so of 2001, and then lucky me, they ended up having two or three openings. They'd never had a female tryout before. And I remember it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, we were getting ready to start, and the SWAT commander at the time, my maiden name's Baragona, and we were getting ready to start the run. And I really wasn't worried about it, honestly. I run and from my experience with running in the police academy, I knew that I could keep up with or beat guys, in law enforcement that are running. I didn't really know what the SWAT guys would be like. And so there was definitely that like, oh crap, I might be stepping into something a little deep here. But I remember we started out, it was still dark in the morning. You know that kind of training way better than I do, but it was still dark in the morning. We're getting ready to start the run and we're lining up 2x2s in a line. And I know, and the SWAT commander says, Baragona, you're about to set some records here. And not because I was going to like beat anybody, but it's because this had never happened before. So we did it, I can't remember all of it now, run. And I remember, so we definitely had like an obstacle course where at the end of it, you had to drag a 170-pound dummy to get him into the SWAT van. And at the time, like those dummies, you could dig your fingers into the heels of the dummy. And the only way I could get out, I was so dead. I couldn't pick him up. And so all I did was grab him by the heels and drag him. And I never thought I would be able to open my fingers again. Mm-hmm. And then we did some rappelling and some, I think some shooting on some moving targets. And I mean, I passed and it took him about 3 months to get me on the SWAT team, but then our SWAT team freaking loved it. I was on the narcotics unit and on the SWAT team. And those two units worked together a lot anyway, because like when I would get a search warrant for our narcotics for a house, the SWAT team would execute the search warrant. So
nice.
We really got to do both all the time because we weren't a full-time SWAT team.
Sure.
We were called a call-out team. So, we trained a lot. We trained every month, at least once a month. We also competed twice in SWAT Roundup International Orlando.
Great.
And what I loved about that is, I'll tie this back into yes, I worked out all the time because obviously I was the only female on the SWAT team. So I had to be on my A game all the time. Now, of course I made mistakes all the time. And I felt like my mistakes were spotlighted like crazy every single time. I mean, it was no big deal for me to get like, oh, Baragona, you shouldn't have done this. Go do 500 mountain climbers. Like, okay. SWAT Roundup International, within our team, we would have a tryout to see who would make the roundup team. And then I made the team the 2 years I was there to do it, which meant that I beat out guys on my own team to make the roundup team. And then there were the 2 years I went, there were 74 teams, 76 teams. Every team has six people on it. And the first year there were three females total, including me. The second year I was there might've been two. But each day you have a competition, and the first year I got to six team members, but only five competed days. So you always have like one man out. I don't care, man or woman.
Yeah, I got it.
And I competed on each event. So I didn't lose my spot. And again, the second year I didn't compete in one of them. I can't remember which one it was, but the beast was the obstacle course. I don't know if you've ever been to SWAT Roundup International in Orlando. You should go. It's fun. I'm going to try and go this year. The last day is the obstacle course. And I mean, beastly, tough looking men fall off that obstacle course almost in like practically in tears. Oh. And I, not only did I compete it, but our team competed it in it, and I completed it. And we placed in the top 20 of that SWAT competition
And that's an international SWAT
international competition. I mean, it's like we had teams from Sarajevo, Germany. I mean, I can't remember the other foreign countries, the full-time SWAT teams, like, you know, LAPD, Dallas PD. I mean, like legit full-time, this is your career SWAT people. And we beat out a lot of those teams when we competed. I loved it. I used to say that you know, not to make light of the fact that we train and to potentially kill people, but that I used to say that I was getting paid to play at that point, that I got, especially during the Roundup training season, we would train 3 or 4 days a week, track training, track workouts, the tactical workouts. We would go to the obstacle, to the actual competition facility at least a couple times a month to train where we were going to compete. I loved it. And so I definitely took the training very serious. I wish I'd known then everything I know about nutrition now. I think that would have helped me even more. I was also doing sprint triathlons at the time. I've heard you talk about how you did triathlons, like the training of it with the running, the swimming, and the bike. I loved that. And if I had just known, if I could have had my nutrition even where like the way it is now, I feel like I could have been at even better level competing.
Yeah, I think we're all smarter, you know, than we were 20 years ago with everything, not only nutrition, but, you know, hydration, electrolytes. Those are huge. And then
and sleep, yeah,
training itself. Oh, sleep. Yeah. I mean,
100%.
When you're young and stupid and, you know, like going out and partying and, you know, you don't realize how much you're ruining your recovery.
Yeah.
You know, with a late night out. So,
I feel like my training to go to the police academy, I don't remember really doing much for it. And whatever PT test, like I did it with no problem. And then certainly that I didn't add any training to when I tried out for SWAT or to prepare for the tryout for SWAT, but I always did cardio. I always did strength training. Because I'd worked at the health club, I very much understood the importance of strength training in terms of you know, having strong skeletal structure and, you know, so not just, you know, and I'm not big into, well, I learned a lot about strength training and the types of strength training. And like, well, we were really big in the time and like the one set to failure workout. And so you do from, you know, quads all the way to triceps on just a circuit. And I did that and I loved it and it was quick, but it was very effective. And so I always had the cardio and the strength and that helped me and, you know, young and dumb, I guess. And then just maintaining that throughout, obviously it was very important to maintain that throughout being on SWAT so that I could not only be competitive on my team, but actually handle a job because, you know, you know, when you're, you know, the training and you practice, over and over and over clearing buildings or like one of the things I hated the most was clearing stairwells. Like if you had to go into a building that had stairwells and go up, I mean, and especially when you're those like paintballs, when you have those, like, you know, they're shooting at you with little
ammunition rounds.
Yeah. That really hurts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It stings a bit.
So I loved it, but you know, to be able to maintain you know, to be a, what's the word I'm looking for? I just wanted to be an operator on my team that helped, that contributed.
Sure.
That
you're an asset. Mattered.
Yeah, to be an asset. So I freaking loved it. And so when I decided to leave, I guess we can get to that. I don't know if you have any questions up to that point, but certainly my training has never stopped. I consider it to be a lifelong journey, not a destination. That's part of what I like to talk about with people is that it's not a, you know, okay, I'm gonna do this and check the box. It's not that. And that doesn't have to be something that makes you feel bad. I think that some people be like, oh, I'm not going to do it because like I'll never get there, quote unquote. And it's not about getting there. It's about, there's so much more to it than that. And to find the positive in the lifelong training, because it gives back to me in so many ways.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, there's the.
How about this? How about we go down and just discuss, you know, as you know, when you are, you know, the operator that you mm-hmm. wanted to be. Obviously, the job is stressful. Mm-hmm. Life is stressful in general. And without dealing with these stresses, metabolizing these stresses, it can become chronic. And next thing you know, you exhibit many other health issues that come along with, you know, stress-related illnesses. What are your ways to help you mitigate these stresses? You know, one thing that you mentioned is that you have this hour a day focus on yourself and how important that is.
And so what I say, like, you can take an hour a day to carve out what I call wellness training. And so what I've realized is, like, one of the things I really liked about SWAT, or one of the things, like, in tactical, so not just tactical fitness, but tactical training. So SWAT-like training, you train. It's like military, you train over and over and over and over again, so that when you need to use that thing in a stressful moment, you don't have to think about it. So what are you going to do if your gun jammed? I mean, how many times have you taken apart a gun and put it back together? I mean, with SWAT training, we used to sit in a room and do nothing but take guns apart and put them back together. And then, of course, we'd be timed and who's going to go fastest and all that. And an MP5 or a Glock, I never had any of the long, what I call long guns, meaning, yeah, I didn't have an AR-15. I did have a Benelli shotgun, but, we'd take it apart and put it together, or so that if it jams in the moment, you can fix it quick and get right back, you know, and not mess up the team or not personally get hurt, or, training over and over again to run up the stairs, or, your brain knows that you can fit, you're physically going to be okay. You're going to get through this. Yes. You're like, if you're sprinting and you feel like, you know, you got to get through it, your brain knows it's fine. We've trained for this. And so what I say is, you can take that to apply it to your wellness. So of course I still work out. Like this morning, I did my 30-minute workout this morning. That's, so when I say you can carve out an hour in a day, and I think sometimes when people are like, oh, I don't have an hour to do all this stuff. And what I want to say is, yes, you do. And I will tell you what I do. I get up, and most days, didn't work out today because my 4-year-old son got up really early. But I usually get up right away, grab my cup of coffee. This is decaf, by the way, because I can't handle too much caffeine, but I love coffee. I get up, grab my cup of coffee, sit down on the couch, and do my 10 minutes of meditation. So that's 10 minutes. Now, I can tell you, sometimes that's no minutes, but I'll get to that. I'll get to my meditation sometime today because it really makes a difference for me. I do my 5-minute gratitude journal, and where I just write down 3 things I'm grateful for, 3 things I'd like to do today, and an affirmation. So I think yesterday my affirmation I wrote down was, I'm amazing, or I don't know, something. Sometimes it's, you know, like, I'm calm, or sometimes it's, you know, I am a hard worker. And there's just some things that you're telling yourself, that the things that you are, the good things about you.
Very important to talk to yourself.
Yes.
Right. And positively,
so,
obviously.
Now that's 5 minutes. And it doesn't take me, sometimes it takes me 5 minutes, sometimes it takes me 2. But let's just say I'm at 15 minutes now. And then I'm going to do my 30-minute workout. So that's, you know, this is more like post-career life, where I'm not needing to train to go save the world anymore. So I don't work out for an hour, very rare. Sometimes I do, but usually, like, I can cram in either a very good yoga session or a very intense HIIT workout or a strength training workout. I mean, I was sweating at the end of my 30-minute strength training this morning. Yep. And so now I'm at 45 minutes. And then the other part of my day to reach that hour is, for me, that's, I might read later today because I love reading, or something that involves creative work. And so with my job now, with my business, I'm creating courses, or I'm creating, but that requires me to, like, sit down and critically think about something and write something. It engages a different part of your brain. So that's what I say about doing that an hour a day. And what I mean, like, apply the tactical training to it, is, like, sit down and think about, you know, what are these things? And then when can you do these things? And then just, and do it every day. And here's what happens with that. If you do it every single day, you're teaching your brain a certain way to think. You're getting your workout, makes you feel good. You're doing your meditation, makes you feel good. And you're creating ways to teach your brain, your body, to know that when you're in a moment of stress, you can come back to the understanding that you have control of who you are, you have control of your happiness, that you, yes, you know, you know, understand how to use linked body breath with movement, which is one of the reasons why I really love yoga. And yoga also helps me with strength as well.
Sure.
And so it's doing stuff like that to teach, to tell your brain that you have the ability to use all of that to your advantage to improve your mental wellness, your overall wellness. And what I say is so that you can find each day little moments of happiness, because it's not about waiting like, oh, I'll be happy when I get there. Or, I'll be happy when I do this. That's just creating too many difficult moments like day to day. And so what I say is find ways to find little pieces of happiness every single day. And so to me, I feel happy when I meditate. I feel happy when I work out. I feel happy when I have a good meal and I eat enough. Because sometimes, you know, I get busy. I'm a mom of three kids and I have a business and I mess up and don't eat enough in a day. And then I pay for it. And so, but every time I do that, and then I just feel good. I feel happy. And I react, I'm reactive less. And that all helps. And so that's what I say is you do have an hour a day. You just have to think about, you know, you might already be doing things that you just don't look at in that way. And it's all about perspective or your paradigm and how you look at it. So you know, that's what I mean by an hour.
That's really good. I really like that routine that you have. And it has to become a routine. And when you build routines, you know, they become habit, obviously, or, you know, habits are routines. But it's hard to build a habit if you're not motivated to build a habit. Mm-hmm. Now, something I tell people all the time, when people ask me these questions, like I just can't get motivated to wake up early and go do something. I said, well, you know, no one's motivated every day to get up out of a comfortable mm-hmm. bed and go do something. You know, mm-hmm. every day I have that struggle. Mm-hmm. Now, I know from, you know, going one way or the other over my lifetime that I will always feel better if I don't skip that process, you know, that next step of just getting up and getting out. I feel guilty the rest of the day. It's kind of a useless day. My productivity at work is lower. You know, all these little things that I know in the back of my head that if I stay in, it's going to cost me this.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas I should just get up. And then I say, you know what? I'm going to get up and I'll give myself 10 minutes. Right. I'm going to start moving for 10 minutes. Right. Mm-hmm. And that usually gets me out of the house and onto where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then I'm at the workout. I'm like, whew, still a little sluggish. I haven't completely awakened yet. So I'm going to give it 10 minutes. I'm going to give this run 10 minutes. And then once that's over, you know, I'm an hour in and we're solid. So you just got to keep giving yourself 10 minutes. And next thing you know, and realize that we're never going to be motivated to train every day. And you can't rely on motivation, to be honest with you.
No, you really can't. Okay, because some days you jump up and you're like, I got this. This is good.
Yeah.
And easy day. Like today I got up and like I said, I got up and my alarm went off. And I typically start to wake up around the time my alarm goes off. But every once in a while it goes off and I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, it wakes you up. Yeah.
And then it's my bed. I live in Houston, Texas, and I feel like we live in Waterworld right now. It's raining every day. And wake up and it's so I can tell it's raining because it's extra dark outside. And like, oh my God. And I have the most comfortable bed in the whole wide world. And then, you know, but then my alarm went off and I hit quit and like, nope, I'm going to get up. Because I know that if I don't, then my routine also, I mean, I'm very strategic in what I've created because I've learned the hard way that if I don't get up and get certain things started before my kids get up and the rest of the day starts, then it starts to spiral down.
Oh, sure.
And so would I love to be able to sleep till 6:30? Yes, I can't really anyway. Mostly I just lay in bed and think I wish I could go back to sleep and don't. And then my brain starts going crazy. But I totally agree. It's that I get up and I just do the same things. And that's what I say, like, my most successful days are like last night. I set out my clothes. I was going to go for a run. I actually don't run all the time anymore because it's just not what works. I don't want to. And, but I was going to, like, sometimes I get up, like, I'm going to do some intervals, you know, I'll go out and sprint fast, you know, go fast and then go slow and then go fast, like, you know, sprint a block and walk a block or sprinter. I love that. I love sprint work. And I don't want to do it every day. So if I feel motivated, got my running clothes out. I sent it out last night. Woke up this morning. I could tell it was raining. Not that you can't run in the rain. I just didn't want to. But I got up. And so I didn't do the workout that I was going to do. And then my son woke up earlier than he normally does. And then I didn't get to meditate. And I, you know, my husband's taking my kids to drop them off at camp this morning. And I was like, I am going to have to, I got to work out. So I actually started my strength training video 15 minutes before my kids left. And my daughter's like, what are you doing? And they know, I work out, they see me working out, but my daughter's like, you're really shaking. Like, I know, baby, but I'm getting stronger. And so I got my 30 minutes in and I told, you know, like if I hadn't done that, like, sometimes you have to adjust, but it's just, I know what works for me. I have my gear. All I have to do is turn on the TV and I'm motivated enough to where, like, I know people say like, oh, if I don't go to a gym, I won't do it. Or I have to have a trainer, I won't do it. I have no problem motivating myself that way, but I just have to stick to my routine, because if it gets to like, oh, I'll do it at 11:30 or I'll do it at 12. Let me get these things done first and then I'll do that. I don't end up doing it. And then I just have a horrible day.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. You know, you're a lawyer, attorney, lawyer. Is there anything that you specialize in your?
Well, I did 13 years of litigation. So I definitely know. And most cases don't go to trial. So I didn't actually do much trial work, which is great because I didn't want to anyway.
Yeah.
But we did, everything was geared to go to trial. So I did, and for many years I did asbestos litigation. So those commercials you see, people have been exposed to asbestos. So they have mesothelioma. That's what I did for a long time. I liked that in the sense that I got to help families. Unfortunately, nobody survives mesothelioma. So all my clients died. But I got to do what I could for the families. Also, those cases are worth a lot of money, and unfortunately, money can do ugly things to people.
Sure.
But I was happy that I learned litigation. And the whole time when I left law enforcement, I knew that I was going to go to law school, didn't know what I really wanted to do with a law degree. I just knew it couldn't be a bad thing. Because I was the only female on SWAT team, and most of the time the only female on the narcotics unit, and it was all the same guys for the most part, I kind of got fed up with those battles. And realized there was like a breaking point one weekend, and realized like, you know what, I don't have to spend the rest of my life trying to prove to you that I'm a good operator. I can go do something else. And as much as I was really frustrated with some of the particular guys on my team, which was really, truly heartbreaking to me when it got to the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Or not that I can't, I don't want to do this anymore, because I could have physically stuck it out for a long time, but mentally it was just not worth it. And so knew that going to law school meant that someday I would find a way to give back to law enforcement, which started, you know, got out of law school, moved to Texas for my husband, and his job took us to New York City. Then his job brought us back to Houston. And in the meantime, I had two kids back to back. And then, but knew always that I wanted to find a way to give back to law enforcement. So in my legal career now, I specialize in representing law enforcement or first responders, particularly, and most of the time that revolves around employment law issues.
Sure.
So all my work, all my continuing education work, everything I do is around the employment law issues. And some of that results in litigation. And, you know, I did that for 13 years. So I can very easily guide and hopefully help either file lawsuits for if I need to, or help people deal with a lawsuit they might be involved in. But most importantly is that I combined what I know about the job is that even before the world we live in now, which is that the public opinion is an all-time low for law enforcement.
Sure.
I knew when I left at the end of 2004 that the job is very stressful and you deal with the micro stressors of the job all the time. And so, you know, from the things like I was telling someone the other day, like the simple things like, you know, you go into these houses for these search warrants because they're selling cocaine or crack or whatever, and there's kids in the house, and they live on like one or two or three family members will sleep on one mattress that's on the floor with no sheets, and they have all their clothes piled on either one side of the room on the floor, like no dresser. I mean, you open up the microwave, you have to search the house, so you'd open up the microwave because it's an obvious place people could hide drugs, and there's roaches coming out of the microwave, and it just that part, and that's like, why is that a stressor? Because it breaks my heart with these kids in that environment. And it's going to be, you want to help them, but you can't. And it's just, you don't have enough time or resources or, you know, it just couldn't. And you see that all the time and you start to think like, oh, well, I guess it doesn't matter, but it does matter. And so dealing with just, and all the way up to like horrific scenes you see, or like sure. The stuff on SWAT team we would do. I mean, and so I want to be able to do something to help cops know that it's okay. First of all, deal with it. Don't avoid it. Don't ignore it. These micro stressors matter. The body keeps score. That's a book. Like, you know, the body does not forget trauma. The body does not, it's going to hold on to it. And if you don't find a way to release it, it will release itself somehow, whether that's through disease or suicide or, you know, heart attack. I mean, I know way too many cops that retire after a career in law enforcement, and then a month later they die, yep. drop dead of a heart attack. Like, that is horrible. Mm-hmm. And so I want to bring more awareness to take care of yourself, like get over yourself, do something about it. Like, talk to a therapist, do your meditation, do your exercise, eat well, get sleep, and but all of that, it's very important. And so I wanted to bring a lot of awareness to and help law enforcement officers, like teach them or teach them yoga. I'm a certified yoga instructor also. So I'm getting ready to start teaching yoga online to cops. But also my legal experience. So I know what it's like to be in a job where you feel like, number one, you're being singled out unfairly a lot. Number two, I was involved in a couple internal affairs investigations, it happens when you're in a narcotics unit. And then those processes are all so scary. And yeah. I wish I would have had somebody like me at the time to call on to say, like, I know what the job is like. I've been an attorney for a long time, and I can, you call me and we can have a conversation. I can say, you know, okay, you're in internal affairs. You're going to have to write a statement, write it, send it to me. I'll help you. Well, I'll talk you through it. It's going to be fine. And so what I've done is with my business is I combine everything that I think is important for like a whole picture of wellness. I consider all these things to be like, I call it like a spoke and a wheel. You know, if you take out a spoke in a wheel, the wheel doesn't turn right. Like, it all matters. It's all important.
Sure.
And for overall health, take care of all of them, because when you take care of one, you're helping take care of all the rest of them. So what I did with my business is I have individual courses that people can sign up on one-off, but I created a membership. And if you're in the membership, you get all these courses that I'm creating as part of the membership, but I include in the membership access to an attorney for one-on-one legal consultations whenever you need it. And so
that's really good. Yeah. I didn't realize all this, and that's fantastic. I will put those links in the description of the podcast, so people can check those out. You know, something you mentioned too, is just being able to talk to somebody, whether that is, I love your spokes idea, because you have, whether it's a therapist, it's legal, it's business, it's mm-hmm. personal, you know, whatever, whenever you can find somebody who is an expert in something that you are not good at doing, mm-hmm. you should listen.
Yeah.
You should listen, because it is growth. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives you a growth mindset, but it's also stress relieving. Mm-hmm. So all these things that you are thinking about and struggling with, somebody has that answer to help you with it. And you're right. Legal advice can be part of mentally de-stressing.
Oh, I 100% consider it a wellness tool, but I didn't just throw that in there because I'm going to, let me just throw this in there. No.
Oh, no. I thought it was great.
Because I believe that it is a wellness tool. I believe that if you can call on somebody to get an answer, and, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of, or it exists that there's distrust in agencies between the officers and their departments. And I was in a union, and I'm not suggesting you should distrust your union. I don't replace unions with what I do. I think you should be in a union if you're a cop or any first responder, because if you do get sued for something, that's one of the main things that unions do for you, is they provide you that defense. If not, you know, my regular hourly rate for an attorney is $350 an hour. I've been an attorney a long time. Normally you hire me, it's expensive. Or can be. And so what I wanted is you don't always need to hire an attorney, and most cops can't even afford $350 an hour or two. And so I felt like if they could just have access to just get ask somebody a question, like, you know, say like firefighters, they have one day on, 2 days off. Almost all of them have side jobs. You know, like, you want to start a business, great, give me a call. We can talk about the things you need to do to set that up.
You want
to start a nonprofit, like, great, give me a call. We can talk about, you know, ways that you can set up the nonprofit. I think that most people are hungry for knowledge. They're just hungry to know how, like, they want to do the right things, and they just want to know what that right thing is. And a lot of times, if you can just, you just want to be able to ask them a question. So whether that's like through legal consultations that I, you know, with an attorney, or like I do live coaching calls once a month, and that a couple times a year, that's on just legal questions for cops. Like, you know, what is qualified immunity? You know, do you really even understand what it is and what kind of protections it affords you? And are there things that, like, is that the last, like, final step? Or are there things before that that protect you? I mean, honestly, if you're following your policies and procedures, here's an example. If you're following your policies and procedures manual and doing what is considered justified, but for city councils who decide that they need to take away certain protections, which I think is crazy, then you're probably going to be fine. But I mean, that's just an example of, you know, conversations to have to give law enforcement officers, first responders, peace of mind. If you take away just one more, start to whittle away, like, one less thing to worry about, one less thing to worry about. Oh, I know I can handle this because I'm learning that through, you know, meditation. I know I'll be fine because I'm learning it through this. Then when you get in those situations and you react less, ultimately all the training I've created is so that, you know, you can't change what the job is, but you can change or control how you are in that job.
Sure. And how you react.
You cannot change that people hate you. You cannot change that you're going to have to arrest people or fight. Like, hopefully you'll fight less. I never got into a physical fight. I definitely wasn't in law enforcement as long as some people are. But I have to be smart about that. I'm a female. I'm almost 5'5". I'm not going to tell you what I weigh. But I'm not big. And so I have to be smart about it. I mean, one time we were arresting a guy for a domestic, he was violating an injunction because he, domestic violence, an injunction. He had beat up his wife way too many times, and he was super calm. And I was dealing with him, and I was waiting for my partner, Josh, to show up, who's now the SWAT commander where I used to work. And Josh is a big, much bigger guy, person than me, but even no matter what, I was not going to attempt to arrest this guy. Number one, I knew that he's not afraid to fight, especially female. And number two, I'm about to arrest him, and he probably will not agree with that decision. And so you have to be smart about how you do it. And I just want to teach people, you know, male or female, you don't have to react. You can, like, because somebody can be screaming at you, and that's not about you. You have the things that you know within your mind and your body that matter. And whether somebody's screaming at you doesn't matter. So just to learn those tactics so that you, you can learn, like, I'll be fine. I got this. You know, this is okay. And if you're reacting less, you might be fighting less. If you're fighting less, you might be injured less. All that matters cumulatively over time. And hopefully when you're retired, you know, you haven't tweaked your back because of that fight you got in, or, yep, you know, things like that. So, yep.
No, that's really good advice. So where can they find information about what you do, Bridget?
I definitely have a website. It's myprotectivewellness.com. And then we're on all social media, which is not my favorite thing. But, you know, LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. I actually just started Twitter yesterday, which is turning out to be way fun. Twitter's more fun than I thought it would be, but I also don't like being on devices or social media all the time, but they have their place. Sure. So yeah, all social media, the company's called Protective Wellness.
Protective Wellness.
And you can find it, you know, if you just put it out there, you find me on all social media and my website. It's myprotectivewellness.com.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, one thing I like to do on the Tactical Fitness Report is discuss your journey, you know, how you went through from before you were serving, while you were serving, and what you're doing now after you're serving. And it's so good to see the growth that occurs throughout that journey. And, you know, always trying to figure out ways to give back to the community that you were a part of, I think is requirement. I mean, you have to do that. And I applaud you for that as well. So everybody check that out. I will put those links in the description of this podcast, whether it's in video or audio format. And I just appreciate your time discussing everything that you've been through there, Bridget.
Well, Well, thank you, Stu. This is so fun. I forgot to mention, I do have a free download. If you go to my website, there's a free download. So if anybody doesn't, you know, is looking into how they can create some of these routines to help them on a daily basis, I have a free download that did give you some tips. You know, it starts with helping you figure out what's important to you, and then carry that through to then how do you put that into action for that 1 hour a day.
Okay, perfect.
And then I do want to tell you, I tried the, that swim stroke.
The CSS? Combat swimmer stroke?
Combat swimmer stroke. And I'm going to send you, I have some questions about that, so I'll send it to you another time.
Yep. Also, have somebody film you doing it, and I can tell you what you're doing wrong.
Oh, well, I mean, it will be a lot.
I'll fix it for you by video.
That's one of the ways my 30-minute exercises a day. I try and do swimming a couple of times a week because I just really like it. Plus, it gives your body a break from, you know, gravity. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, but I will. I will have my daughter would love to record me doing that.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, Stu, so much. I appreciate it, and we'll keep in touch.
All right. Thank you very much. And everybody, have a good day. And until next time, Tactical Fitness Report signing off.